All right, guys, I am coming to you from London today. I am here because I'm attending the coronation, or I'm just going to report on the coronation. Of course, I'm still following everything that's going on in America, and I'll just tell you right at the top here, right out of the gate, we need to bring back insane asylums. I feel very strongly that we need to bring back insane asylums. And if you woke up this morning and you felt like you needed a hug or you needed to be coddled, this episode is just not going to be for you. If you are the kind of person who thinks that I'm not compassionate enough toward people with mental illness, this episode is definitely not going to be for you because I'm not feeling very compassionate about Jordan Neely, and that shouldn't surprise you. And so we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about why it is that we suddenly exist in a society where mentally well people are being told that they need to yield to mentally ill people. All of that needs to end. Later on in the show, we're going to discuss, of course, Russia and Ukraine. That seems to be heating up, and you should be paying attention to it because somebody attempted to assassinate Vladimir Putin. And by somebody, I don't mean Zelensky or NATO, because they have no idea who it was that could have possibly sent a drone over to the Kremlin. Yeah, things are getting very serious. And as I said, we need to be paying attention to it. All that and more today coming up on Candace Owens. So I don't know, you tell me, is this the new George Floyd? Is Jordan Neely the new George Floyd? It seems that way. People are feeling a lot toward what happened to him. How could this possibly happen? A crazy person, Jordan Neely, 30 years old, steps onto the subway and he says that he doesn't care if he gets arrested. He doesn't care if he goes to prison. He doesn't care if he dies. And of course, he has a history of, 42 arrests over the last 10 years. But that doesn't matter because we should still be feeling compassionate. Fortunately for the other people that were on the subway, a hero stepped up, a veteran stepped up and subdued this man, put him into a chokehold because, what do you think happens on a subway when a crazy person enters and says that they don't care what happens to them? It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. I've been in those circumstances when you confront somebody, when you are confronted with from somebody who is a crazy person on the subways. As you know, I lived in New York City for 7 years, and you don't know what they're going to do next. Now, before we get into more of a Jordan Neely story, let me tell you that the idea that homeless people are just suffering and all they want is some food is complete and utter bullshit. Okay? In these circumstances, 9 out of 10 times, you are dealing with individuals that are drug-addled maniacs, okay? They didn't end up in the streets because they just couldn't pay their rent. Typically, they ended up in the streets because, as I said, they have a steep history of mental illness. They've been on drugs. They were willing. You've seen Intervention on A&E, right? They were willing to abandon their family and their friends for the next hit. That is the average homeless person in New York City. They are not somebody to be feeling bad for, they are somebody to be fearful of. That is the truth. That is the truth that the Democrats and the left do not want you to acknowledge because it's coddle culture. They want you to feel bad every time you see a maniac that is threatening to harm you. So a man who was a off-duty journalist, his name is Juan Vasquez, recounts exactly what took place as he was on this subway on his way to Yonkers at about 2:30 p.m. on a Monday. And here is what he had to say in his own words. Take a listen.
The man began shouting, quote, "I want food. I'm not taking no for an answer. I'm ready to go back to jail, and I'll hurt anyone on this train."
The man got on the subway car and began to say a somewhat aggressive speech, saying that he was hungry, he was thirsty, and he didn't care about anything. He didn't care about going to jail, that he didn't care that he gets a big life sentence. And it doesn't matter if he died.
Vasquez says he was scared and believes others on the train were too. That's when he says a 24-year-old rider came up behind the man and put him in a chokehold, holding him there on the ground. Two other men standing over them also helped subdue the man.
If there was fear, the people who were bluish or who were there, where he separated everything, moved from their place. I stayed sitting in my place because it was a little further away. But obviously, those moments, well, one thinks fear, one thinks he may be armed.
He says that chokehold lasted about 15 minutes, even with the train stopped at one point at the Broadway Lafayette station and the doors open.
Well, most of the people left. If they open the door, the train separates and it leaves. almost all the people just stayed. The ones who were there on the floor fighting, a couple who was standing in front of them stayed.
Vasquez says no one thought the man would die, even after he went limp. EMS arrived and performed CPR, but he could not be revived.
I think no one thought that he was in a risky situation because he was defending himself all the time. All the time he moved, he tried to remove his arm, and then when they had it on his side, he kept kicking. So he thought that he's defending himself.
So he said, quote, "I'll hurt anyone on this train," according to Juan Vasquez, who was there. "I will hurt anyone on this train." And Juan Vasquez says that he, a grown adult man, felt fear because a rational mind would feel fear if a person who looked like a vagrant jumped onto a train and said that they were willing to go to prison, that they did not care, that they were willing to die, and that they would, quote, "hurt anyone on this train." But pardon you if you think that that's rational thinking, because obviously we have politicians that are sweeping in to tell you otherwise, despite the fact that Jordan Neely, as I mentioned, I think I said 42 arrests. No, he had 44 prior arrests, many of them subway related, including for disorderly conduct, assault, and fare evasion. But despite that, despite all that, despite the fact that he had a history of threatening death, he had a history of harassing women, he had a history of screaming obscenities, despite the fact that his father says that he was a high school dropout who rarely took his medicine. Medicine for what? I don't know. Despite the fact that people online are saying that he's the same man that, according to this guy, jumped on me, grabbed my shoulders, and pushed me toward the tracks Sunday night at this very station. I was able to run away, but he, Jordan Neely, got physical and chased other people standing on the platform before getting on an uptown train. Despite all of that, all of the evidence that clearly this man was becoming more and more enraged, more and more emboldened in his crimes, don't worry, guys, despite all of that, the left is here to tell you why you should feel bad for him. Feel bad for him, definitely, because he lost his life, because a hero stood up and tried to save everybody that was on the subway. Let's cut to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Here's what she said on Twitter. She says, "Jordan Neely was murdered, but because Jordan was houseless and crying for food in a time when the city is raising rents and stripping services to militarize itself, while many in power demonize the poor, the murderer gets protected with passive headlines and no charges. It's disgusting. I am convinced that AOC is the kind of individual who roots for Joker when she's watching Batman. I am convinced." She watches it and she says, "He's a mentally ill man, and we should feel bad for Joker." I really do believe this is how she thinks. This is how they are trying to condition everybody to think, right? That you need to be angry at people who think rationally and to tell people that they are wrong to feel fear when everything around them is telling them that this situation could end in death, because it could. When Juan Vasquez says, "We didn't know if he had a weapon," he is correct. For all they know, he could have had a pocket knife. He could have been willing to stab someone or harm someone for food, okay? Everything in his history indicates that you are dealing with somebody who is a repeat violent offender, but they don't care. 42 arrests, and she still says he was murdered. 42 arrests, and there are still people protesting an unjust end to his life. Why? Well, you know why. Obviously, he was killed by a white man. And that's what it all comes down to. It doesn't matter what a black person does. If you are a white person and you do anything to subdue them, then you are a horrific, backwards individual. And it was probably motivated by race. I think that's probably what their takeaway is going to be. The veteran was obviously motivated by his hatred for black people when he jumped on an individual and attempted to subdue him from harming others on the subway. Here is my honest takeaway. I am so serious when I say that America has gotten soft on mental illness. I talk about this every day on this show. I show you what people are doing on TikTok for views. I show you what individuals are pretending to be, what they are saying. I mean, it's anything for attention. And rather than us saying that we need to address this seriously, you have politicians and the media that are telling you that you need to feel more and more compassion for these people. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to feel less and less compassion for these individuals. I feel no compassion whatsoever for Jordan Neely. Let's make that clear. And some of you guys are watching this and you're going to say, well, of course, Candace Owens feels no compassion for him because he's a black man and she never defends black men. No, I never defend black criminals and I never defend white criminals. I have this thing. It's crazy. I just don't defend criminals. I know it's wild. I just don't come out here out of the gates and I feel compassion and emotion for people that are spreading harm in our society. But before we get there, so I want you to know that I am an equal offender of crazy people. Okay. On my way to London, I encountered, and unbelievably, I have footage to show you, a crazy white girl at the airport. And you are going to see what my reaction was to this crazy person. Okay. Let me set the situation up before we show you the footage. I am barefoot playing in a little open lounge area that they have for children at the Nashville airport with my two children. That means I am with a 2-year-old and I am with a 10-month-old. Playing on the ground when I hear a commotion that is taking place feet away from me. Immediately, my instinct is to take my child and to hand my infant daughter over and my 2-year-old son over to the nanny so I can understand what is happening. And what do I see? I see a white girl that is walking up to the police officers screaming at them, saying that they are going to make her TikTok famous. She then takes her fist and she starts punching, trying to punch this officer in the face as she's leaning back and the officer is leaning back, avoiding her shots. And of course, a crowd has gathered. Of course, it just happens to be the circumstance that Candace Owens is standing there watching this. And the crowd is saying nothing because the girl is with a group of people that are defending her and telling people that it would be inappropriate for them to record her. At this point, I obviously intervened and I told her that she was inappropriate and that she was a psycho, and you're not going to believe what she said to me, guys. Take a listen.
F*** you!
Hey.
What?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Ew. What the
f***? I swear to God.
Record her.
She's a subject. Record her. You should be ashamed of yourself talking to a police officer like that. You should be ashamed of yourself talking to a police officer like that. The work that they do to keep us safe.
Unacceptable. What the hell was that?
She was surprised. She was surprised that I was intervening because, as she asks, aren't you black? Aren't you black? I'm calling the police officer a pig. This actually took place at Nashville Airport in front of me. She's trying to punch a police officer. She's calling him a pig, and she says that he's going to make her TikTok famous until somebody, that being me, outwardly shamed her. And then you hear what she says. I have Tourette's. Oh, there it is, guys. Another mental illness. So the entire world, which, by the way, if you have Tourette's, you should be offended. Last I checked, Tourette syndrome did not mean that you want to be TikTok famous and be violent towards police officers. But what do I know? Everybody has a special disorder. Maybe she has some rare new age TikTok disorder. Well, in order to get famous, you have to punch a police officer in the face. I don't know and I don't care. I was with my children. I don't care that this was a white girl. I certainly do not care that she is mentally ill. My question is, why are mentally ill people constantly allowed to be in public putting the public at risk? Why was Jordan Neely allowed to be put onto a subway, allowed to be walking around freely in New York after 44 prior arrests? Can someone explain that to me? Why does the white girl who has Tourette's syndrome and wants to beat a police officer allowed to clear security to board a flight to London? Somebody explain that to me. I'll tell you why. It's because we've gotten soft on mental illness, okay? We've gotten soft on shaming people. We have gotten soft on being the people that stand up and say something. Because let me tell you something. After I did say something to mental ill girl, TikTok virus, whatever it is she has, she calmed down. She was so embarrassed. Oh my God, the audacity of someone to shame her in the airport and tell her she was inappropriate. This is what needs to take place. Public shamings, public lambastings, and let me make something very abundantly clear. Had that police officer not had been there when I was at the airport, had the two officers not had been there assisting the situation, and that girl grew violent around my children, I would have been the person putting her in a chokehold. It would have been me. I am so sick of this gloves-on approach when it comes to mental illness. I am so sick of a world that says that there's something wrong with us for commenting on it, that there's something wrong with us for being fearful, and it is going to take people taking these scenarios into their own hands rather than relying on a system where politicians are angry at police officers and angry at veterans for standing up for other civilians. So that's my take. I don't feel bad for Jordan Neely. I don't feel bad for crazy white girl with Tourette's at the airport. I feel bad for the rest of us because no one has the courage to say that we need to bring back insane asylums. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
As you all know, faith is a very important part of my life. I'm always looking for ways to deepen my faith and to grow closer to God. And that usually starts with prayer. But it can be hard to stick to a meaningful prayer routine, which is why I love Hallo. Hallo offers a wide range of guided meditations, thoughtful prayer sessions, and daily reflections that are designed to help you connect with God on a deeper level. With Hallo, you can customize your prayer experience by setting reminders, choosing a prayer theme, and even specifying the length of your prayer session. Hallo is helping me and thousands of others to maintain a daily prayer routine, and it can help you too. Download the app for free at hallo.com/Candace. Not sure where to start? Check out Father Mike Schmitz's Bible in a Year, available on the Hallo app for brief daily readings and reflections. Or you can pray alongside Mark Wahlberg or Jonathan Rumi, who portrays Jesus in the popular series The Chosen. Get an exclusive 3-month free trial at hallo.com/Candace. That's hallo.com/Candace. Hallo, the number one Christian prayer app in the United States.
Okay, now it's time for some topics du jour. All right, guys, so where are you at now on this Russian-Ukraine narrative? I know I was kind of the first out of the gate to tell you that everything our government was telling us was a lie, and people were really upset with me because that was when we were living in Ukraine flag in your profile photo, in your profile pictures, and I stand with Ukraine even though I can't point it out on a map. I know that's those are always fun times when people just get a social contagion and care about issues that they don't even understand. But obviously, everything that our military tells us is a lie, and you should have caught on by that. I thought it was pretty obvious when Zelensky kept making appearances at every magazine and every red carpet event. He was appearing suddenly, wanting to be seen, requesting to attend the Academy Awards, requesting to attend the Grammys. An incredible PR firm must be working with Zelensky, so that felt inauthentic. But in case me piecing that all together for you didn't work, obviously we had the Pentagon leaks, whereupon which we discovered that our government has been outright lying to us. And despite not having a congressional vote, which is what is required to go to war, we were told that the Pentagon leaks assured us that we already had boots on the ground, that we were already militarizing within Ukraine, which is shocking. And of course, it's something that the mainstream media does not want to talk about, because then they would have to face the fact that we are being lied to by the executive office, by the executive branch. Well, now things are really heating up in that region, and we don't know what to believe, obviously, because while I don't believe our government, I obviously don't believe the Russian narrative either. Governments lie. That's the entire point. What we do know that took place is that there was a double strike at the Kremlin residence where President Vladimir Putin resides normally. He was not there. And now they are claiming that they need to be increasingly hawkish towards Ukraine. Essentially, the war is just heating up, and they are calling what happened a terrorist attack. The former president, Medvedev, said, quote, "After today's terrorist attack, there are no options left aside from the physical elimination of Zelensky and his cabal." Now, who are Zelensky's cabal? That would include us. That would include NATO. So if they are saying that they have no options left aside from the physical elimination, we should be concerned. We obviously should be very concerned, and we should be even more concerned, again, because our media refuses to tell us the truth about what's actually happening in that region. We are creating enemies, very real enemies, and we have pushed Vladimir Putin further into the arms of China. This is not light stuff. I can't express to you enough why I have been saying that we have no business in that region, that we need to be paying attention to Biden's very shady dealings in that region. I mean, the entire idea that Ukraine is a country that's fighting for democracy, I don't care whether or not you are Ukrainian. Obviously, I feel bad if you are a citizen of Ukraine, but it's Ukraine, right? It's an incredibly corrupt country. It has been a laundromat for a very long time for the West. Again, You can feel bad for Ukrainian citizens in the same way that you should feel bad for American citizens. You should always feel bad for people that are existing under their government lies. But you also need to be realistic about the fact that we are not over there for noble reasons. We did not suddenly jump out of Afghanistan to jump into Ukraine because we care about spreading democracy in that region. Russia has always had a very clear line in the sand in terms of NATO expansion eastward. And now it seems that that line in the sand is being very much crossed. So this is something to pay attention to. It is something that you should be discussing. And I would like to know what is going to be the congressional response to the Pentagon leak. I don't know that we are going to see one or hear one, but it is something that is certainly on my radar. Now, let's say we do get dragged into World War III. If you're wondering where it is that our military stands, well, the U.S. Navy has platformed a drag queen influencer. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. To attract the youth, because right now the military is facing a hiring crisis. That makes sense to me, obviously. You're encouraging men to act like women, and I don't think that those men are necessarily going to want to sign up to fight overseas wars. But yes, this is a real headline. There is a drag queen influencer that is trying to engage Gen Z. Sign up for the military because I'm a drag queen or something. Here, he who dresses up like a she is, in his own words. Take a listen.
CNO, you better work. That was my first reaction to my peers when they showed me today this article. Admiral defends non-binary officer against attacks from GOP lawmakers. This is so important and incredibly amazing. Thank you so much for the support from the CNO. I hope to meet you one day. This is incredible. As a non-binary person myself and a queer person, there's struggles. I face a lot of hate, more online from other service members, probably more than anything else because it's easy to hide who you are. However, the amount of support over triumphs, all of that, all day long, every day, and I love it, and I'm finally happy to see this level of impact from high leadership, because this is going to make waves to so many people who wear this uniform, and I'm so proud to. I really hope to meet you one day. I think this is incredible. So thank you for the support. Thank you to other people who support, and to the queer people out there, to the other service members and sailors. I love you, and remember to be yourself.
CNO, you better work. That was my first reaction. You know what my first reaction was? I could probably beat that guy up. I feel like I could beat that guy up. I feel like if you had to put money on a fight between me and that guy that you just saw, you probably would put your money on me. And that should make you very upset, because this guy is now recruiting people. Not only is he in the military, he's recruiting other people to be in the military. And that doesn't make me feel secure about the direction of the United States military. I just imagine that if you are, well, let's say Vladimir Putin, or if you are a Kim Jong-un, if you are any dictator or any world leader that is adversarial to America, you're feeling real good right about now, right? Americans can't figure out what bathroom to go into. They don't even know what a woman is. And now they're having drag queens that are recruiting people to be in the military. I don't know. I just feel like you would be feeling pretty cushiony right about now. I think actually Robert J. O'Neill had the best take that I've seen on this. If you don't know who he is the guy who literally shot and killed Osama bin Laden. He tweeted, "All right, the U.S. Navy is now using an enlisted sailor drag queen as a recruiter. I am done. China is going to destroy us. You got this, Navy. I can't believe I fought for this bull." And I think that that is the way that most veterans must feel when you see what is happening, when you see a military that is so politicized that they are kicking out good people because they refuse to get the COVID vaccine while accepting people who are openly saying, "See now, you better work," on their TikToks and saying that these people should be leading the recruitment effort. You have to be angry. You have to be angry at yourself for being willing to lay down your life for a country that you do not recognize. What does America stand for anymore? That's what I would imagine people like Robert J. O'Neill are thinking. And this is why we are facing a recruiting process in the military. Because why would you want to go out and defend a country that wouldn't possibly defend you? To go back to the Jordan Neely situation, when you have a veteran who actually is standing up to still defend American citizens, you have politicians that are screaming for your imprisonment. It's just a sad state of affairs in the United States of America. All right, guys, let's get into some of your comments from episodes past. We only have a little bit of time left, but this is from Dave Pan on the topic of pornography, which we discussed earlier in the week. Dave Pan writes, as a man that has been addicted to porn for 7 years, I can say that I've never felt so low in my life as during that period. It affected me deeply on many personal levels, but also in my relationships with both men and women, my family, my faith, my performance in school, etc. I can say that all the good things in my life happened post me quitting porn. I don't think it matters if you're a Christian or not. Porn is poison. It is a drug and should not be discounted as anything less. It took me another 7 years to become 100% clean because porn is not just the hardcore stuff on porn sites, but everywhere from social media as well in the softcore form. I can only recommend the easy peasy method to anyone struggling with this. Thanks for speaking out on this, Candace. Dave, I'm thrilled to read your comment, and I was actually, my heart was warmed by how many men commented and pretty much to the exact same effect, talking about how much they struggled with it and how it wasn't yet an open conversation because I think people feel so shameful, or maybe there's this element that if you're a real man, you should watch porn. But it's really interesting to see that there are so many men that are saying, I struggle with this, it ruined my relationship, it ruined my life, you know, so many elements of what I had to do to become a better person after becoming addicted to porn. And I'm very hopeful that Dennis Prager, who I obviously know and love very much, will take a look at that, because I do think that, which this is by his own admission, so I'm not guessing here, that he is, when he talks about pornography, he's talking about a Playboy magazine. And obviously the world has spiraled since. The Playboy magazine represented a beginning and where we are at now in terms of all of the content. And as this man correctly pointed out, even the softcore porn that is available when you open your Instagram app. I mean, I constantly have ass cheeks in my face. I don't understand why. So I can't imagine what that's like for a man. And this stuff only gets better if we're willing to talk about it. Another comment here, this is just a nice one, which is very sweet. This is from I Made Ari Santo Jonathan. He writes, I'm a person that leans progressive and has subscribed to Candace for 9 months. I've had my fair share of agreements and disagreements with her, but consuming her podcast is an overall beneficial experience for me. The experience made me better in two ways. One, I can handle disagreements in a more rational and civil manner, the way that she handles the many attacks coming towards her. Two, she inspires me to not be tribal in my politics. She has consistently called out things that she disagrees with from her own side with respectful arguments and evidence. In many ways, she taught me to stand up for what we deem as truthful, given the framework that we currently have, regardless of how other people, especially who possess higher prestige, opine. This behavior has not been displayed by any left-wing commentators. The closest one would be Anna Kasparian when appearing on The Ben Shapiro Show. I wish Candace and her family all the best in life. Thank you so much. That is such a kind comment, and I'm glad that you don't always agree with me. I encourage people to think for themselves, and if you're agreeing with me on absolutely every topic, that's probably not a good thing either, because sometimes I don't even agree with me. Sometimes I'm like, I don't even know if I agree with myself right there. What I mean to say, obviously, in a non-joking manner, is that we change with time, we change with experience, and for me, obviously, I'm living proof of that. I used to be fully a liberal. I used to think that progressive policies made sense. And then I was met with the real world. And now I am very staunchly conservative. I hope I don't turn you off by this episode, basically me saying that we need to bring back insane asylums, but we must. It's the only way. The only way forward is to bring back insane asylums. All right, guys, that is all the time that we have for today. I have lots of exclusive content that's coming up, as you know, on Daily Wire Plus. So go ahead, click the link in the description and subscribe right now. And be sure to come back tomorrow because there will be a brand new episode, as always. We'll be right back.